April is Earth Month, and if there's one thing I've learned, it's that quality is sustainability. Think about it. When you invest in well-made, durable products, you're not just buying something that lasts longer, but you're reducing the need for constant replacements. That's why I am happy to tell you about the Avocado Green Mattress. When it comes to mattresses, Avocado is the MVP. Top rated by Consumer Reports 8 years running. They use certified organic materials like latex, wool, and cotton. No nasty chemicals, just pure comfort that keeps you at the perfect temperature all night long. Here's the game-changing play. Right now, you can save up to 10% on these incredible mattresses at avocadomattress.com. Plus, they give you up to a full year to try it out, and they even have easy financing options with Affirm. That's how confident they are you will love it. Head to avocadomattress.com today and save up to 10% on certified organic mattresses. Dream of better. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At MyBookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. This is the Zabecast. From the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Thursday, April 3rd, 2025. Thank you for downloading. Kevin Sheehan comes your way in about 15 minutes, give or take. And we have a lot of good stuff to talk about. But let's start with this. So you've built a better sports mousetrap. A, the advent of the so-called torpedo bat, which is, I think, actually misnamed because I would say those bats look more like mortar rounds or perhaps RPGs. But what do I know? Has led to great discussion in sports about what is or is not considered fair or cheating when it comes to better equipment. In every sport, the implements of the game have changed over and over and over through the years and decades and now centuries. None more than my favorite sport, golf, where the old feathery golf ball itself was once a round ball stitched together, made out of leather, soaked in water, then stuffed with a top hat, they said, full of feathers. Hence the name feathery. It was then soaked again, left to dry, hardened in the sun, and then, McGregor, be careful not to lose it, because they were expensive and time-consuming to make. They were also brown, which you would imagine would be hard to find over the hither and yon and the heather and gorse of old Scotland. That, of course, led to the gutta percha ball, which was made out of tree rubber from Malaysia. It cut the cost of making the balls down by a multitude of 100x almost, and the time almost the same. They were also white. They flew far. They were more durable. 'Twas a better ball. Now, at the time, the man who taught old Tom Morris, the most famous golf professional in the game's history, how to do stuff, whether it was cut the greens, maintain a course, build a club, make a golf ball. His mentor, old Tom Morris, was a guy by the name of Alan Robertson. And the relationship between mentor and pupil was broken permanently when Robertson, the mentor, found out that old Tom was playing the new gutty ball and that it had put Robertson's business of making featheries, a 200-year-old family business, in jeopardy. So they didn't speak anymore. Morris had to leave St. Andrews and go to the west of Scotland and start over again at Prestwick, where he was the greenskeeper and professional at that course. And basically, the gutty did take over golf, whether or not Alan Robertson could stop it. It did destroy his business, but the Robertsons did go on to start making the gutty themselves. In tennis, by the 1970s, racket engineers were experimenting, how do we make bigger, more durable, more high-performing rackets? They used a range of materials such as wood, fiber-reinforced composites, aluminum, and steel. One of the key rackets from this period was the classic Prince racket, which if you're about my age and played some tennis growing up, you know very well. The Prince racket, based on a 1976 patent from Howard Head, had become the game changer in tennis. Of course, that name, Howard Head, you've heard of Head rackets. The classic was made of aluminum, which allowed for a much larger surface than its wooden predecessors, and thus made it easier to hit the ball. Also, the old tennis strings used to be made out of cat gut, which, if you were to allow to get wet in the rain, could cause them to ping, ping, snap. That led to synthetic strings, and pretty much nobody played cat gut strings. I remember briefly when I was a teenager, early 80s, late 70s, there was a couple kids that had actual cat gut tennis rackets. But at that point, the race was off and running, and larger, oversized, synthetic material tennis rackets were the norm, and nobody could stop it. In basketball, the old Converse Chuck Taylors used to be the sneaker or basketball shoe of record. But if you see a classic pair of Chucks, as they call them now, or have ever worn them, you might think, holy shit, guys played NBA games in Chuck Taylors? Yes, they did. They're very flimsy, with virtually no arch support or padding or cushioning or anything else. Hell, the upper was made out of soft canvas. Converse started making early basketball shoes in 1917. They redesigned them in 1922 when that same Chuck Taylor, who was a good high school player and briefly a semi-pro player, but turned out to become a salesman and executive for the company, requested a better shoe with more support and flexibility. Hence, the Chuck Taylor was designed, primitive as it was. The popularity of the shoes was due in part because they had a soft inner liner that prevented blisters more than other basketball shoes back in the day. Now, only people wear Chuck Taylors or Chucks as a retro style fashion statement. Ice hockey sticks have evolved. Originally made from simply wood, they are now expensive materials such as aluminum, fiberglass, carbon fiber, composite, and aramid, which I don't even know what that is. They say brands like Kevlar, Nomex, Tuaron, etc. account for some of the high-tech hockey sticks. In addition to weighing less, the composite sticks can be manufactured more consistently with more consistent flexibility. They also don't have the natural variations that wooden sticks do, and they all perform superior to simple wooden sticks with a crisper rebound and flex and everything else. There used to be a few diehard NHL players who would stick to the old wood as late as 2010. Guys like Paul Stastny, son of Hall of Famer Peter. Some of the sticks, though, have replaceable wood or composite blades. Now others are one piece without a replaceable blade. Needless to say, the composite sticks, despite their greater expense, have become commonplace at all levels of hockey. Also, the curvature of the blade is limited. It cannot exceed 3/4 of an inch from the heel to the base of the toe. This was to try to limit what was considered to be an advantage in terms of speed and flippability and accuracy of an overly curved stick. At least it was once upon a time. This, however, has gone away for the most part because the new sticks are so good, they don't have to be curved like the old banana blades of the 1960s. By the way, if a player refused to surrender his stick for measurement for illegal curvature when requested, the referee would receive administer a minor penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct, plus a misconduct penalty on top of that. I can't remember the last stick challenge in the NHL, but it's been a while. In football, when it comes to better mousetraps, I would say that very few things have come along which were declared or derided as unfair, or even eventually outlawed as illegal. Probably because the sport hinges on raw speed, strength, brutality. Any innovations that have been widely adopted, or they were because it was a safer mousetrap, not so much a better mousetrap. But innovations, and I use that term loosely, like Stick'Em, which was just disgusting, yellow, sticky, goopy stuff on the hands of DBs in the 80s, like Lester Hayes for the Raiders, had then given way to receiver gloves, scuba gloves, essentially, that allow for the Odell Beckham Jr. one-handed catches that defy belief. Adoption became the norm in the NFL instead of trying to say, hey, you can't use that. The one piece of equipment or one thing that was done to try to limit advantages that were being gained were to kickers who were getting too good in the early aughts, so the NFL introduced something called the K-ball, which is a more right out of the box, not as roughed up or sanded down or sat on or sort of processed kicking ball that the kickers would go through to make it a lot easier to kick straight. And there was a period where I would say that accuracy of kickers took a slight dip once the K-ball was introduced, but I believe that dip is gone now, and these guys are insanely accurate. There, of course, was Tom Brady and Deflategate, and you know that story. We don't need to go through that now. Helmets have evolved a ton, but they render no actual advantage to the team or player, other than, you know, keeping your head from being scrambled. Cleats are all a personal preference. Tearaway jerseys were kind of an advantage for some guys like Earl Campbell, but those have been litigated against, and the league got their arms around that. So the NFL doesn't really have a torpedo bat of their own, which brings me to the ultimate build a better mousetrap in sports, torpedo bat-like thing. We take you to the America's Cup yacht race, which, if you go and read the Wikipedia entries on what it is, you may know all about it. You may be a yachting enthusiast or just of the age like me to remember when it was a big sporting event. But it's so funny that this sport for the rich, for the Northeast prep school types who went on to become bankers and lawyers and full of money and big yachts, and oh yes, and the popped collars and the yachting sweaters at the New York Yacht Club and other yacht clubs around the world. This ongoing challenge, this yacht series of yacht races or regattas, as they call them, had been going on with the U.S. dominating any challengers from around the world for a long, long time, like 30 years. Until in 1984, Australia, with their boat Australia 2, came to New York Harbor and beat the famed Dennis Conner, skipper of Team America. And he did it with controversy, of course. He had a special hull that had a winged keel underneath the boat that had never been seen before, that gave them clearly an advantage. But because in the long stipulations of the rules of the America's Cup, it said nothing about the shape of the keel. They, of course, kept the keel hidden under tarps when the boat was out of water before they started the competition. And then when they finally won the thing, they're like, ha-ha, look at that. And boy, were our guys pissed. Dennis Conner was pissed. And so it went to court, and they fought it. And there was lawsuits. Ended up, well, there was nothing that they could do legally, so it stood. But in 1988, when the Cup came back to the States in San Diego this time, Dennis Conner said, oh, you brought a winged keel single hull yacht last time, right? Because it was technically within rules. Well, bam, look at this. I brought a catamaran. And the Kiwis at the time, New Zealand was the opponent. They were like, what? They screamed bullshit. They're like, no way you can race us in a catamaran. This is always going to be way faster. So sure enough, America won easily in their catamaran. And then the whole thing went straight to court. After completion of the races, the court case began, and the cup was eventually awarded to New Zealand on the basis after the competition that a monohull like the Kiwis and a catamaran like Dennis Conner had was a gross mismatch and not in the spirit of friendly competition between the countries. However, an appellate division reversed the ruling, saying that the deed of gift of the America's Cup, ye deed of gift, does not limit design or say anything about the number of hulls a yacht may have. And the reversal was confirmed on April of 1990 by the New York Court of Appeals. Thus, San Diego retained the cup, defending it again in 1992. And that year, I think they got into a different class of yachts. I've not followed it since then. Somebody who is a big yachting enthusiast can fill me in via email. But yeah, torpedo bats, hold my beer. Watch this. I'm going to show up to a yacht race with a category of boat you didn't even think that I would bring. Sure, it's got one sail and one mast, as is required. Yeah, it's under 90 meters, which is the maximum length according to the rules. Didn't say anything about a catamaran, though. Bam! Well, then, we're going to see you all in court when we sue. Quick break when we come back. Kevin Sheehan, Team 980, and the Kevin Sheehan Podcast joins us. You are listening to the Zabecast. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. Joining us now, a man who invented the smell test in gambling, where all your picks should smell like fresh lilacs, or you should pick another team, from Team 980 and the Kevin Sheehan Podcast, Kevin Sheehan.
The purple ones?
I don't know. What does a good pick smell like right before you push the money through the window?
I think lilac's a good thing. I think that's that purple flower that you love to smell. Like.
I think it does. Have you patented?
I don't know, maybe a chocolate chip cookie.
Have you patented the smell test yet? You really should.
No.
Why not? It's a great way to bet. It's as good as any other way to bet. Let's put it that way, right?
Should I take it to the Shark Tank and see if they're interested?
See if the sharks like it.
Somebody can ask me if I've patented the idea.
Yeah, see if Mr. Wonderful likes it, or Barbara Corcoran likes it, or Cuban likes it.
Who would be your Shark Tank partner choice?
Wouldn't be Cuban. Not a fan.
Why?
Not a fan. I don't know. I haven't watched enough Shark Tank to know who's the best shark when it comes to, you know, all of them have passed on what turned out to be $100 million ideas or more, right?
I think Lori is the one that has, I think, generated the biggest return on investment.
There's got to be websites that loosely track this, right?
Oh, I'm sure. I don't know that for a fact because I don't track it myself. I do watch the show occasionally, and I think she is pretty sharp, especially with retail stuff. But I don't know. I bet Cuban wouldn't be a difficult guy to work with. But so those would be the top two for me.
I think great ideas are a dime a dozen. It's the execution that's the hardest part of it.
Sure. Always. Yeah. Yep. That's why when you pick up a business plan, Zabe, you literally turn right to management. Who's managing the company? What's their background? And are they capable of executing on this idea?
Exactly. All right. You've been a busy, busy boy as of late. And my people are going to say, just stop fucking around, Zabe, and ask Sheehan if he's happy with the hire of Buzz Williams.
You know what? I'm fine with it. And you know how much Maryland basketball means to me. We've known each other for a long time, and it's, you know, right there. At the
arguably
top
more than the Commanders do right now.
Yeah, I think Maryland basketball, well, look, the Redskins forever were my number one, and the Maryland basketball was, you know, 1A. But, you know,
what year did you graduate from Maryland?
Late 80s, 87.
Got it. You had a great time there, I assume.
I'm older than you.
You are a couple years older. You had a great time at Maryland.
It was the best 5.5 years of my life.
Exactly.
I enjoyed it for about $600 a semester in state.
Right.
But you know how I feel about the football team now. That passion level isn't where it used to be, but
the Commanders,
I'm very excited.
The Commanders football team.
It's hard for me to say.
Right. When you say the football team, you mean the Commanders, a.k.a. the Redskins. You don't mean the Maryland football team.
No.
Which you,
no,
of course, Skins root for, but I doubt that you have any delusions of grandeur for that entity as the university still does.
Well, I'm a big Maryland football fan, but, you know, it's a basketball.
But you're realistic, though.
Yeah, I'm realistic. You're not going to. Although, you know, Indiana just made a playoff berth, so anything can happen with a 12-team playoff, and Maryland certainly recruits well. Loxley's got, you know, a big-time class coming in, but it's a basketball-first school, and as far as Buzz Williams goes, given the situation that they were in, I like it. I think, you know, they were in a bind. They were Kevin left late. They were caught off guard. The portal had opened. The portal's about to close. There weren't many coaches left, and they got a guy with a big-time resume. My concerns are that this guy has been a guy that seems to be looking for the next job the moment he takes the job that he's in. You know, at 52, maybe it changes. At maybe the best basketball school he's coached at, maybe he ends up loving it more. We'll find out. He is a good basketball coach. Really good defensive basketball coach, and I think Maryland will win with him.
Yeah, his tempo is 5 years at a place, but I think somebody put it on Twitter. Look, I don't have time to worry about 5 years from now. I want this program to be good a lot sooner than that. It's sort of like you buy a piece of electronics where they're like, well, you know, you can't replace the battery. Well, shit, there'll be something new by the time the battery runs out in this electronic thing I've got. So let's just go with it now. To me, that's a non-factor if I were a Maryland fan.
You know, that's such a practical answer, typical of you, because especially in this environment of college sports, which is so year-to-year, so transactional in nature, if you told me right now the 5 years included a minimum of 4 NCAA tournament trips, 3 Sweet 16s, and Elite Eight, and a Final Four, I'd gladly send him off to his next job after 5 years.
Right. Let's not worry about that right now.
Yeah.
You got Willard, though, after his initial press stink bomb, to come on your show and plop another Alka-Seltzer into the glass of water. And I got to give you big credit for that. I'm just wondering if after the shit hit the fan, he then called you up or texted you like, hey, thanks a lot, asshole.
No, he didn't. And I got to know Kevin, you know, and his wife, and I actually really liked him. I do like him. And I also think he was an outstanding basketball coach. I also think with respect to the situation, two things are true simultaneously. One, he didn't leave the right way. And two, it's a look in the mirror moment for the school, because they've had two good coaches essentially say, I don't want to be here anymore. And if you don't learn from why two good coaches essentially said, I don't want to be here anymore, then, you know, you're what, doomed to repeat the same thing.
So that's what Turgeon himself lost faith in the administration and said, you know, if you don't believe in me, I'm out of here. And that's why he checked out midseason.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, it's no secret. He didn't like the athletic director. The athletic director didn't like him. And I think what got revealed here over the last week and a half to 2 weeks is that, and you know this, we've had conversations, you know, I've probably been delusional as to what Maryland is as a basketball program. 20 years ago, Maryland was a legitimate top 10, top 15 basketball program and probably a top 10 job. But the sport has changed, and they've had basically a decade and a half of, you know, good regular seasons, a lot of wins, but very little March success. And this sport is about March. And, you know, part of what got revealed is that there have been challenges for coaches there, even going back to Gary, with the athletic department and athletic directors and the commitment level and the recognition that Maryland is a basketball first school. Everybody understands football drives the bus. You know, the Big Ten television dollars are, you know, where the significant majority of the money is coming from for the athletic department, and it's going to go to football.
Right.
But this was an opportunity, I think, for many out there to say, look, we got to be better here, because the next guy we don't want leaving after 3 years for another job either. What can we do better? And I actually think the school came back to Kevin and gave him a lot of what he was looking for.
Yeah. By the way, it seems like there've been more than our share of coaches in the DC area that left in very awkward and or unsavory ways. Not just this Willard affair and not just Turgeon quitting midseason, but remember when Jim Riggleman of the Nats quit in June?
Right. Yeah.
It's like, what the hell's going on here?
Remember when Spurrier quit with three games left in the season?
Well, yeah, right. Technically, he didn't quit until the season was over from the golf course, but he was letting, what's his name, former Bengals? Marvin.
Yeah.
Marvin Lewis. He was letting Marvin Lewis run the practices.
Yeah.
In the final 3 weeks.
What's his face, who coached the Browns, call the plays, and nobody loved calling plays.
Oh, that's right. Who was that for the Browns?
Oh my God. He was the head coach when the Browns went 0-16. I'm blanking on the name.
It'll come to us.
Hugh Jackson.
Yep. Spurrier's like, yep, Hugh. I let Hugh call the plays this week. And we're like, really?
He was huddled up in a parka sitting on the heated benches for that game against the Cowboys late in the year, just counting down the moments until he could leave.
We had heard from sources, as our friend Ken Beatrice would say, that Spurrier watched one practice from indoors, from his office windows overlooking the field at Redskin Park, as Marvin Lewis ran the practice. And holy shit.
Well, didn't he, in a late season game, I think it was in Jacksonville, didn't he play golf? It was a 4 o'clock game, and he got out and played golf early in the day.
Am I
thinking about that one correctly?
He always would go out to play golf, Spurrier, with as much time and daylight was left during training camp in August, out at a golf course. And by the way, they're standing up again, Beacon Hill, which was out near Redskin Park in Leesburg. So there you go. It'd been dormant for 18 years, though, by the way. How's your wonderful course, Columbia? Very nice?
Yeah, it's great.
How's the subway incursion? Is that over with or no?
No, that project continues.
Does it really?
To go on and increase in cost, yes.
Oh, man. How has it affected the course?
Not at all.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to...
The course actually was improved because of it.
Oh, I thought it was going to take out a hole.
Oh, no. Oh, they reconfigured, several years ago during that whole thing. Yeah.
All right. Very good. So the tournament itself with the 4-1 seeds, I'm just wondering, do you like it, love it, hate it, confused by it, happy? I mean, like, what are your feelings? Because you love college hoops. I mean, these are four all-meet teams we've got, so that's good. But Cinderella may be dead in a gutter somewhere.
Yeah, for good. Because of the portal. Yeah,
just for good. There are people predicting, Sheehan, that's it. You're never going to see VCU, George Mason, St. Peter's, Loyola Chicago. That's never happening again. None of those runs.
It's possible. I mean, 2 years ago we had Florida Atlantic and Miami and San Diego State, but it's different 2 years later. I actually love this Final Four, other than Maryland not being in it.
Sure.
And I really like a team in the Final Four, and I'll tell you why. I love Houston. Houston reminds me of the Baylor team of 2021, which ended up being an underdog in the national championship game against Gonzaga. But when you watched Baylor throughout that tournament, you just realized they were grown-ass men. And, they were playing college teams. And I think that's Houston versus the field. I think they are just grown men, and they are well coached, and they are physically just dominating on defense. And I think Duke's great. I think Duke's better than Gonzaga was a couple of years ago, and Cooper Flagg's the real deal. But I just really like Houston this weekend to win against Duke and then to beat either Auburn or Florida in the national championship.
It might not be a bad flyer. Are they the second favorite team to win it all? Duke is favored.
Well, because Duke's favored, they're probably not the second favorite, because they would be predicted to lose that game.
But catch them right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see how it shakes out. Pivoting to the NFL. How about, Sheehan, the NFL scheduling not one, not two, but now three games on Christmas? And there's a report that the Chiefs have already said to the league, hey, we want to be your Christmas Huckleberry every year if this is going to be a thing. Boy, did they move in on the NBA's territory, didn't they?
I mean, does the NBA play on Christmas Day?
They they will still, but we're going to have eight games. I think five NBA, three NFL.
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
cow.
I mean, with the NFL on, it doesn't, I don't think I watched 1 minute of a December NBA game.
Wow.
Yeah. I would say too, you love this stuff. With three Thanksgiving Day games and three Christmas Day games, the Skins are a lock for either Thanksgiving or Christmas Day this year, right?
I would think they've got a high probability. What about overseas? Are those all?
I think Madrid is a possibility. Brazil looks like it's going to go to the Chiefs. There's some rumors out there about Chiefs Chargers.
Yeah, NFL Internet, I'm looking this up. They named one or two teams, I believe, for the international games this fall. I know Dublin is not named, and that's a juicy one that many fans would love to go to. And there's a rumor it could be Steelers versus Packers. And certainly if Rodgers ends up on the Steelers, then just put it down as a lock. But that one has not been named yet.
I thought the host teams for all of the seven international games have been named.
Looking right now, yes. Pittsburgh is in for Dublin, but their opponent is not. You're right, all the host teams. So the Chargers have Brazil, Sao Paulo. The
right.
Colts have Berlin. The Dolphins have Madrid, Spain.
Right.
Steelers in Dublin. The Jaguars in London, obviously. Tottenham, Browns in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, as well as the Jets. So Jaguars, Jets, Browns, all in London.
Right.
And those other ones. Yeah. So you think the Commanders could land where?
Well, the only two possibilities, because they have road games with the Chargers and the Dolphins, are Brazil
and
Madrid. And so that's why. And there's been some rumors out there among all of the schedule geeks that the Chiefs are going to open against the Chargers. So I think Madrid's a possibility for Washington to play their road game against Miami.
By the way, used to do Schedule Madness in May, when right before the league schedule came out, where you would say to your listeners, who wants to guess with me and see if they can get all the games right? I think there's contests stood up around this. Do you still do that? You still
do the mock schedule? Yes, yes, I still do the mock schedule every year.
I love it. Do you feel like you're getting better at it?
No, I think, you know, like the smell test, sometimes I think it's completely jumped the shark because everybody else is doing it. And I have threatened in the last few years to stop doing both of those things, but I haven't done that yet.
Really? Everyone's encroaching upon.
The mock schedule, Zabe, which I've been doing now, I think, for 16 years, something like that, 15 years. Everybody does it now.
You were the damn first. I know that.
I should have patented that. That's what I should have patented.
I don't know if there's any money in that per se.
I doubt it.
But I will say that the power in what I would call NFL tourism has never been higher. That people really want to get right on top of a trip that they and their friends, their buddies, their families have been talking about. Like, ooh, we play so-and-so this year. I'd really like to go see Lambeau Field or Allegiant in Vegas or SoFi. And that's part of why many stadiums are having trouble keeping out the opposing fans. This has now become a thing for the mighty Packers because they're unhappy that there's more and more opposing color in the stands all the time. And I say, you can't stop it. People want to travel.
Listen, I think you started talking about this years ago. I mean, Lambeau, and once the Raiders moved to Vegas, you knew that was going to be.
That'll never be better than a 50-50 home crowd. Just like Jerry World has become, you got to go see it, right?
Right. Now, what's interesting is all of those years that Washington would see road teams take over their stadium, it really wasn't. It wasn't, even though Washington's a wonderful tourism town, that wasn't necessarily the reason for it. It's that nobody from here was going to games. But no, I'm with you. I mean, I have a lot of friends that are more into going to a Skins road game than going out to Landover.
Yeah, I can understand that. Landover rated the dead last stadium amongst not just NFL, but also baseball and indoor arenas for basketball and hockey by, I believe it was Yelp. So
We're all concerned about our Yelp ratings.
Well, I know. I mean, like, you didn't need to make a chart for me to go, yeah, I'm sure that place came in dead last.
Beat farmer Dwight Schrute was very, very concerned about his Yelp rating. But I am.
So what's the one? What's the one place you want to see you haven't seen yet?
That's what I was going to ask.
Oh, you're going to ask me? All right. Well, let's check them off. Okay. Well, then I can fix that.
I know you can.
The Commanders. The Commanders are not playing there this year, so I don't know if you want to wait for a Commanders game or you want to come to just a random game at Lambeau. That I can arrange as well if you want.
So what's your? That would be my number one NFL. My number one overall is Cameron Indoor for a Duke Carolina game.
I see now, for you being such a college basketball fan, you got to go do that.
I've been to Cameron Indoor, just not for Duke Carolina.
Okay. You've been for the Terps. How many times?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to Cameron Indoor a couple of times, but never for Duke Carolina. South Bend for a Notre Dame game would be great, but Lambeau would be for an NFL game. Yes. What about you?
Those are all very good. I've been lucky enough to go to Cameron Indoor for a Duke UCLA game when Baron Davis was a freshman.
Wow.
That was a hell of a game. And then I also did see a Duke Carolina game at Cameron Indoor in the late 90s when I was working in radio down there with the guy that was a Duke guy that had tickets. And it is an amazing place just because it's the pinnacle of college basketball in a 9,000-seat, vintagely preserved old stadium. It's not a dump. It's vintage preserved, and it's 9,000 seats, and it's loud.
What about where you haven't been?
Okay, so I've been, obviously, Lambeau. I've been to Jerry World. You got to see that for the size of the Jumbotron. Yep. It's unbelievable. I have not been to L.A. so far. I have not been to Allegiant. I would like to go. You know, there's just places I'd love to go to Mile High in Denver to see it.
Arrowhead would be on the list for me.
Everyone talks it up. Of course, they're right now, I saw a story, their owner is thinking about, are we going to rebuild a new one or just renovate what we've got?
Right.
Because they want to put a dome on it. Did you know, Sheehan, and I didn't know this until a year or two ago, that the original plan for both Kauffman and Arrowhead next to each other was that there is going to be a single movable awning that went from one stadium to the other, like a garage shed on wheels.
No, I did not know that. I mean, how many years ago?
Look that one up. That was the original idea. And I was like, holy shit. You sure that would have been not a nightmare to maintain?
Yeah, maybe unsafe too, given that it would have been built in the 70s.
Exactly. All right. Well, look, last ask, Tush Push, have you been hammering this as a Commander fan to ban it?
So it has nothing to do with the Eagles, I swear to you. I just hate the play. I hate the play. I hate the look of the play. But the presentation of it about the safety and the fact that there's no data to back it up, I think they should really emphasize more the pace of play part of it, because it's not a play the Eagles run just on fourth and one. You get sometimes, multiple times, a third and 2.5 and then a fourth and one. I don't like that. And I certainly don't like the fact that they were about to award Philadelphia a touchdown in the NFC Championship game because Washington was trying to be aggressive and creative in trying to stop it. I don't know where you come down on this. I would love to see them get the 24 votes. It doesn't look like they're going to. I think Philadelphia has probably left a lot of yardage on the field running.
Really?
The Tush Push. Think about, you know, with Saquon Barkley and the weapons they have, the big play potential of third and 1.5, fourth and one. Now, maybe
that's an interesting thought. I had not thought about that. That they might.
Well, there could be more misses too. There could be more misses as well. But where do you come down on this? I don't know.
I want them to ban it out of selfish reasons, because it would help the Packers, because they share the same division as the Eagles, and I don't care what people say. Yeah, conference. I'm like, I don't care what people say about, you know, oh, just get better and stop it. I'm like, if I could legislate out a rival's best weapon, fuck yeah, let's write the rule. Like, we're trying to win here. I don't care about coming off as not tough enough. And then the other point is that it's just too hard to officiate now, that there's too much tension pre-snap. There's guys twitching and flinching and moving, and guys
pace of play.
Well, and guys are lined up offsides. Like, the referees cannot adjudicate the play because it is such a high-tension siege before you even get to Hutt Hike.
Totally with you. Do we have time just to talk about the new overtime rule?
We do.
Have you thought about it?
We do, and I hate it because I'm an overtime sudden-death originalist that would like to go back to the way it was, because the original overtime sudden-death was a 53-47 proposition. The coin flip winner won it 53% of the time. The loser, 47. That, to me, is an acceptable spread. Life isn't always fair. You've played four quarters of football for fair. It's time to end the fucking game. Good luck on the flip. That's my feeling.
By the way, you know that the 53-47 was on the team that got the ball first, but it wasn't necessarily on the first drive.
Which waters it down even more.
Yeah. So I was an originalist as well, but I have adapted.
You've succumbed to the whims of the populace who demand more football.
No, I actually have. I've liked it, and I think it's enhanced the game. But they really may have messed this one up from this perspective. Why isn't it a 15-minute extra period? 10 minutes now. First of all, the strategy now changes, right? Kyle Shanahan blew it in the Super Bowl 2 years ago when he didn't defer. You know, you have to defer now that both teams are guaranteed possession of the football, because, you know, you want to know what you need when you get the ball. So if you win the toss, you defer. And secondly, if the other team scored, you have four downs because you're not going to punt.
Exactly.
So there's a significant advantage of getting the ball second. However, with 10 minutes, you can literally, as the team that takes the ball first, you could really milk the clock, and you could really leave the other team with, you know, after they use their two timeouts, you get two timeouts in overtime. They should give teams now three timeouts so that you can use them on defense if you're getting the clock milked on you. I mean, what if the other team scores and you've got, you know, a minute six left to go tie for a touchdown?
Yeah.
Should have been 15 minutes. Makes no sense. Well, I know it's safety.
It's gonna result in more ties. And nothing pisses me off more than having to see a third number in the win-loss column of the standings. Like, ties are the dumbest thing ever, right? And so you're right. By the regular season rules, without making it 15 minutes, or without making it we're going to play till a winner in regular season, is
Well, they would
annoying.
Never do that because Why? Of the safety part of it. But
they play games. They play games on 3 days rest on a Wednesday, saying, you'll get over it. So they don't really give a shit about safety.
Be pitching and screaming over any extra football.
Yeah, but then you placate them with one less padded practice in May, and they're like, okay, great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kevin, good to talk to you, my friend, and we'll check in down the road. Thanks, bud.
Sounds good.
Let's end on this. Oftentimes, the most dangerous place in your house is your shower. Dodgers first baseman Freddie Freeman was out of the lineup last week for their game against the Atlanta Braves because, according to the team, he had a mishap while stepping into the shower with his surgically repaired right ankle. Convenient excuse or a legit, whoa! The hotel I was in Vegas, I got out of the shower, forgot to put down the little bath mat outside the shower, and I took one step, started to slip, and said, whoa, slow down, big boy, slow down. And I was tiptoeing like Peter Griffin at the top of the stairs in his socks until I could get a towel down and get on firmer footing. Get better, Freddie Freeman, and careful next time you're in the shower. Thanks for listening. That concludes the freeloader portion of this week's Zabecast, the Monday through Thursday. If you would like to get Fridays as well, then go ahead and sign up. $5 a month, even less when you sign up a year at a time. Go month to month. Cancel any time. Does not bother me in the least. And then you'll hear Scott and Sally tomorrow as they are back in the saddle for me. The old school Steve Zabin show, or first team on Fox, as we called it, is back and rides gloriously yet again with Scott and Sally on Fridays, part of your subscriber package, and including being able to get Monday through Thursday ad-free, which is a nice perk as well, and you get the podcast dropped the night before. So another little thank you from me to you for being a loyal subscriber. Go to zabe.com/premium. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your Thursday, and we will see you next time.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.